You're listening to On Shifting Ground. I'm Ray Suarez. In 2020, Poland's Constitutional Court blocked one of the last available avenues for legal abortion. The decision by the conservative court now only allows terminations in instances of rape, incest, or when the mother's life is at risk. Even in such cases, significant barriers remain. The requirement to show proof of rape makes it almost impossible for rape survivors to obtain abortions, including people who fled the war in neighboring Ukraine. The ruling sparked an immediate reaction, and across the country, hundreds of thousands of demonstrators, mainly women and young people, took to the streets in the largest protest movement since the fall of communism. Although the ban is still in place, the political impact of the protests has already been evident. And they may help spur a new feminist wave in Poland. Activists hope it could one day change the law. Writer and feminist Agnieszka Graf talks to us about the protests and the influence the Catholic Church has had on Poland's increasingly restrictive abortion laws. Agnieszka Graf, welcome to On Shifting Ground.
Hello. Glad to be with you.
Take us back to the late 1980s. If Americans were aware of abortion rights in Eastern Europe at all, they may have known abortion was legal in many countries, widespread in some, but they might also recall that the influence of the Catholic Church was strong in communist Poland. It set Poland apart from Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Bulgaria. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, could you get a termination before the Soviet Union's Eastern European Empire unraveled?
Yes, abortion was legal. In fact, it was legal when it was still illegal in Western Europe. So, for instance, many Swedish women would come to Poland to have abortions. But that was before the 70s. By the 80s, I think Poland would have seemed familiar to many Americans, especially in conservative states, in that abortion was legal, but it was also under siege in ideological terms. For instance, Poland was one of the countries that embraced this pseudo-documentary film that was made in the 80s in the United States called Silent Scream.
This film, and other films which may follow like it, must be made a part of the informed consent for any woman before she submits herself to a procedure of this sort.
It was quite well known in the United States in anti-choice circles. In Poland, it was actually shown to kids in schools. I remember I was a kid in this time. I'm born in 1970, and I saw it twice. Once in my religion classes, to which all good Polish kids went, including good Polish Jewish kids, and another time in school. It was actually shown in my school by a kind of, committed Catholic teacher who could have gotten in trouble for it because Polish schools were, of course, secular under communism, but they did it anyway. So there was this sense that if you're involved in the struggle against the regime, you are committed to Catholic values, which for many people meant being opposed to abortion. And actually, you know, as someone who was in the Catholic Church at the time, I was a believer, even though my parents were secular and quite unhappy with my commitment to Catholicism, you were anti-choice. So I remember having these really long conversations with my mom where, you know, I was the pro-lifer and she was pro-choice. And I recall these now when I'm in the streets protesting against abortion bans. So it was a complicated setting where the role of John Paul II is absolutely crucial to all this.
Well, what about today? Can a woman still request and get a termination of an unwanted pregnancy?
No, to the point where even if your fetus is disfigured, even if you're carrying a pregnancy that will inevitably lead to the death of the child right after childbirth, you are still under legal obligation to give birth. Poland has the most restrictive anti-abortion law in Europe as of late 2020, when the so-called Constitutional Tribunal, and I say so-called because of complicated political issues around it, made this ruling that brought hundreds of thousands of Polish women, especially very young women, into the streets. So it's completely forbidden. You can still theoretically have an abortion if you're a victim of rape or incest, or if your life is under threat. But those cases are actually so difficult that women tend to choose traveling abroad to have abortions, as they would in all other cases.
Well, let's journey along the road with Poland. The Berlin Wall has fallen. Solidarity wins and Lech Wałęsa becomes president of Poland. There was a gradual rise in conservative politics in post-Soviet Poland. Was banning abortion always, frankly and openly, part of their political program? Did Polish women know an abortion ban was on the right-wing to-do list?
Yes, we knew it. We were constantly aware of it, and we were constantly being hushed by the liberal elites. It was an inconvenient truth for those in Poland who wanted to enlist the church in support for Poland's democratic transition. So it was a complicated scenario where you could say that women's rights were held hostage by this political balance, because it was generally believed that without the church's support, Poland will never join the EU. Without the church support, liberal reforms will not get popular support, and so on. And the price that the church was exacting throughout the transition era was the abortion ban, which was introduced in 1993, which is called a compromise law for complicated reasons, but which is actually a compromise between male politicians and priests. So women were hushed up about it. And the culture war around abortion starts again in 2016, when the church is no longer an ally of democracy, when the church is quite obviously in an alliance with the anti-democratic party, the right-wing populist party Law and Justice, and also ultra-conservatives want to make the law even harsher than the 1993 law, which was already very restrictive. It had only three exceptions, and it was almost impossible to get a legal abortion. But it became an open conflict again in 2016, and I think many Americans will remember the so-called Black protests in Poland, which were actually referenced during the March on Washington. I think it was Gloria Steinem in her speech at the Women's March on Washington who mentioned that Polish women were involved in struggle. So that was a new stage. But from 93 to 2016, feminists were told to shut up.
Poles are still predominantly Catholic. 90% of the population is legally defined as Catholic. But church attendance is down, especially among the young, especially among people, that is, of childbearing age. Is the church still as influential as it was during the papacy of John Paul II, when the regime killed Jerzy Popiełuszko, when heroes were coming out of the church and part of the liberation struggle in Poland?
Well, the church is extremely influential politically because of its alliance with the populist right. However, it has lost its claim on moral truth and moral authority, especially, as you said, with the young generation and Poland having the most restrictive law and being the last country in Europe in terms of LGBTQ rights, which is another connected issue because of gender, is also the fastest secularizing country in Europe. But I think we really need to tear these two things apart, to keep them apart, the way people think and behave, and what politicians in Poland, especially right-wing politicians, tend to assume about the power of the church. It is power that comes from the nationalist right, which has given the church basically all the legal influence that it wanted and all the financial clout that it demanded. So I think this contract, this social contract where it is assumed that Poles are Catholic, is about to crack. You can see the cracks in it, but it's still holding up For instance, religion lessons are still obligatory in Polish schools, and the ministry is making sure that it's hard to get out of them. They're theoretically non-obligatory, but if you decide not to attend them, you're kind of in limbo because there is no alternative. So in big cities, a lot of kids are not attending them, but in a small village, it's really not a choice. And there are many connected issues like Catholic symbols in all public spaces, abortion laws, access to contraception. So it is really a regime now and not a culture. Whereas my memory of John Paul II in late 1970s and 80s when I was a teenager is that, you know, he was a Polish hero. He was the one that we all looked up to. And that's completely gone. It's very difficult to explain to a teenager today, and I happen to have a teenage son, you know, why JP2 is so important. The teenagers now are cracking jokes about John Paul II all the time. It's almost folklore.
He was beloved, but also staunchly, militantly anti-abortion, and never made any bones about it. The week that he was shot by a Turkish attempted murderer in St. Peter's Square, Mother Teresa had traveled to Rome to weigh in with the Pope to try to influence the outcome of a referendum in Italy on abortion rights. Abortion was never far from John Paul II's mind. Maybe Poles longing for liberation just didn't put that front and center when they thought about this guy.
Yeah, I think you're right. People didn't think it was for real. They didn't take it seriously. Polish Catholicism is a matter of symbols, of sentimental attachments, of customs. For instance, you will never meet a Polish person who would eat meat on Christmas Eve. We eat fish. This includes atheists and Jews. And the Catholic Church does not require it. This is a Polish custom. And, you know, Vigilia is a sacred holiday. And we have hundreds of rules like this. It has to do with songs, with how you dress for communion, with the kinds of gifts you get, and so on. And the idea that the priests should tell you what to do in bed with your wife or husband is quite far from most Polish people's beliefs. We are very unlike American Catholics in that regard. When I went to college in the U.S. in the mid-90s, I was signed up as a roommate with an Irish Catholic from Vermont, and I was shocked by how seriously she treated Catholic doctrine. You know, she had 7 siblings. She thought premarital sex was terrible. And I was, to her, like an atheist. While I wasn't Poland, you know, a devout believer. I mean, you had sex and then you went to confession. Everybody did that. We treated the church as a kind of, you know, slightly deranged aunt that told you what to do, but wouldn't really control you because she didn't know how anyway. So it's very different, I think, from American Catholics and even from Irish Catholics. So when the law was installed, people were shocked. And this includes Catholics. And then when an even harsher law was put in place in 2 stages, because the first stage was actually 97, the 2020 law, people were really completely stupefied that this could be true, that these Catholic fundamentalists were really taking this idea seriously, that you could tell a woman with a seriously sick fetus in her belly that she had to give birth. So these extreme restrictions, unlike many countries in South America or in Ireland, are really against most people's moral intuitions in Poland. And certainly this concerns contraception. You have to remember that John Paul II was very much against contraception, not just abortion.
Well, does this, as it does in the United States, set more urban places against more rural places politically? Does this set up a confrontation between those places? We have them in America as well, where the influence of the institutional church is waning, versus those places where it's still very strong.
There is a cultural difference between small town and village Poland, especially the eastern and southeastern Poland, and big cities. But I would say that the difference is not so much with the belief that abortion should be banned as with the belief that Law and Justice, the right-wing nationalist party, is an ally of ordinary people. So I don't think the connection is necessary really there, that people who vote for Law and Justice are also staunchly anti-abortion. And increasingly, actually, the numbers are shifting in favor of pro-choice positions, even for people on the right, especially women. So sooner or later, the right-wing parties will have to deal with this fact that their alliance or symbiosis with the extreme wing of the Catholic Church is actually hurting their popularity. So I would speculate that in another 3 or 4 years, the abortion law will have to be changed in Poland. I think it's about 80% now that are strongly against it. Higher than ever, these restrictions have turned people around on this issue. It used to be half and half.
We'll hear more after the break. You're listening to On Shifting Ground. I'm Ray Suarez. Our guest is Agnieszka Graf, a Polish feminist and co-author of a new book, Anti-Gender Politics in the Populist Movement. She's with us to share how women in Poland lost the right to an abortion in 2020 and their fight to win them back. When the Dobbs decision came down from the Supreme Court here in the U.S., abortion rights supporters immediately began strategizing about how to get women in states where abortion is less and less available to places where they could more easily get the procedure. Is something similar happening in Poland inside the context of the EU, for instance? Is the abortion rights movement now organizing to get women denied at home to a place where they can end their pregnancies?
Very much so. One of the most effective, spectacular, and to me, moving signs of this new wave of feminism in Poland was a phone number, which was spray painted in the streets, in buses, everywhere. You would walk on the sidewalk and you would have slogans, anti-abortion, pro-abortion, and that phone number. The phone number was for a group called Abortion Without Borders. You call that number and you immediately got help. The organizers of this are a group called Abortion Dream Team, and they're truly fearless. I'm endlessly impressed with their dedication and bravery.
Well, the Roe v. Wade decision made it legally difficult for states to ban or block abortions in the United States. But when Roe went down, just as the right to the procedure was opened up by the courts in the United States, 50 years ago, that door was slammed shut, not by a referendum, but by the courts. Where was the decisive action in Poland? Was it in the national legislature, from the executive, Poland's elected president, or like the U.S., were courts a crucial battlefield?
It was the court. It was the Constitutional Court, which just a few months prior to this decision had been subjugated by the populist government. So it's a very similar dynamic where you get a populist political power taking over the legislature. And as in the States, they had tried to push it through legislature before. The 2016 protests were actually against a legislative effort to introduce a complete ban on abortion, and we managed to stop it. I say we because I was part of that movement.
Well, what happens now? I mean, if American activists want to go to school on how you organized in Poland, what would the women organizing around restoring those rights, what should they be looking for in Poland?
Well, I think that's where the differences might begin. If the pro-democratic forces in Poland win the next election, then the Constitutional Tribunal, which passed this law and the law itself, will doubtless be decreed illegal because the whole process of appointing judges for this tribunal was just completely outside the books. So the law will then have to be reconsidered. In the United States, whatever you might think of Trump, his appointees on the Supreme Court are, of course, legal. So the overturning of Roe v. Wade will be much harder. But of course, we don't know if we will win the next election, and we don't know what the winners will do with the power of the Catholic Church in Poland. But I don't think the present law will hold. What is really up for debate in Poland with the liberal, so-called liberal parties, is whether they would want to go back to the so-called compromise law or whether they would want to make abortion legal. And of course, Donald Tusk has gone on the record saying that he believes now that he has ripened to the idea that it should be women's right to choose, but he never said it again. This was a one-time promise. And I think a lot of the political alliances are built around the idea that, well, women's rights have to wait because we need to get these Catholics into important positions.
You mentioned the Constitutional Court a couple of times now. Didn't the way that court was constituted end up attracting attention in Brussels and Strasbourg? Wasn't there negative attention from the rest of the European Union about what was going on inside Polish governance?
Indeed. The most spectacular attack on democracy by the Kaczyński government was dismantling the court systems in Poland, and putting this kind of kakus legal system in its place. And that is, of course, what the biggest demonstrations were about starting in 2015.
You mentioned The Silent Scream, and that was a very, very big film in conservative circles, shown in Catholic schools here in the United States, shown to weekend retreats of young Catholics, so on. Is Poland part of a transnational conservative movement? Are there links between Catholic and non-Catholic conservatives in the United States, Hungary, Poland? Are they talking to each other? Are they strategizing with each other?
They are indeed. And a lot of the learning actually happens between the U.S. and Eastern Europe, and a lot of the money flow is moving in that direction. In other words, Polish Catholics have been learning from American evangelicals as well as Catholics on the abortion front, getting their materials, getting their images, this whole idea of, you know, you show the fetus and people will change their minds about abortion is an American idea that started in the late 70s. And pro-life movement, the so-called pro-life movement, I prefer to call it anti-choice, has since those decades grown into a much larger conglomerate of people from different faiths. For a time, it actually included some Muslims and Jews, but it's mostly ultra-conservative Catholics and ultra-conservative Protestants and Russian Orthodox people who form what we call in our research with Elżbieta Karolczuk the anti-gender movement. About 10 years ago now, these anti-gender campaigns started. And under gender, the right meant much more than just, as I think it's understood in the United States, trans rights. It's actually a whole set of issues, including, depending on context, there will be different emphasis, but it includes gay and lesbian rights, trans rights, abortion, contraception, divorce, which is a big issue in Ireland, for instance. Gay marriage is huge in France, but also violence against women and prevention of violence against women. That was a huge issue in Spain, for instance. And the organizations are indeed, as you said, international. The best known one is the World Congress of Families, which originates in the late 90s, and it was actually co-funded by Americans and Russians. But there are others. There is a huge platform called Citizen Go. There is an organization that originates in Brazil but is big in the United States called TFP, which stands for Tradition, Family, Property. And one of their daughter organizations is actually the biggest force in Poland called Ordo Iuris. So it's a huge network which has a complicated and very effective strategy, huge amounts of money. And now it has quite a group of scholars from all over the world examining what they're up to. And it's quite terrifying from the point of view of someone who's been involved in the struggle for women's rights for decades, because it's more than backlash. It's actually a kind of new wave of activism, truly meaning to overturn women and sexual minority rights, to undo the work of the second wave of feminism and LGBTQ rights.
It is fascinating to take what, at first glance, might be totally discrete issues. You know, homosexual rights, for a long time, the knock on homosexuals was that they were subversive to the traditional family because they did not reproduce. Reproduction just wasn't an issue when you talked about gay rights in a lot of spaces, employment, housing, discrimination of various kinds. But folding gay rights and trans rights into a blast against feminism and against abortion, the right for women to time or control their fertility, might at first glance seem counterintuitive, but it brings on board the same allies, the people who have a certain view of society that they would like to perpetuate. And it's turned out to be a political winner, hasn't it?
Yes, but I would actually disagree with you in the assumption that putting these issues together is only a conservative idea. The women's movement was allied. I mean, it was a bumpy road, but it was allied with the LGBT movement starting the mid-70s after some squabbles. And the idea that we have a common enemy, which is heteropatriarchy, is a longstanding feminist idea. And also, it is not as new as it might seem. I think what is new is this obsessive use of the word gender as something that needs to be struggled against. The idea that gender is a demonic force, that's new. That's actually born in the mid-90s in the Vatican, the anti-gender, the gender agenda was invented by an American, a concept invented by an American journalist called Dale O'Leary in the mid-90s. And it made a career in the Vatican, and then it was became part of this broader ideology. But if you forget about the word gender for a moment, you will realize that a lot of these arguments were made by Phyllis Schlafly in the 70s. A lot of these arguments were made by Anita Bryant. That the family values conservatism that grew in the United States as backlash, often run by women, that's why I mentioned Schlafly and Bryant, as a response to second wave feminism. This is a cultural battle that really has been ongoing for half a century. And I think we were wrong to assume that we won it, you know, that Roe is there forever, that gay marriage is there forever in the United States. Of course, in Poland, we don't have that problem because we can only dream of gay marriage. But I think the struggle is ongoing.
But there is a rising tide of attacks and targeting of homosexuals in Poland, isn't there not?
Yes, Poland has official homophobia very firmly in place. Although the general population is increasingly willing to accept gay rights, not just gay neighbors, but gay rights. So it's kind of like with abortion. The more restrictive the government, the more hateful the government rhetoric is on these issues, the more open-minded the people. And of course, you know, every year new people are born. And I think the youth consciousness on these issues is really global by now. It's modeled by Netflix and not by the Vatican. But I guess referring to the United States, I think there was a widespread belief in the last few decades that there's nothing to worry about if you're a woman or a gay or a lesbian, that, you know, these things are there for good, that it's a kind of inevitable progress. Well, it isn't. This anti-gender movement is really a powerful international force, and it's powerful not because it has such a huge popular base, although they do have millions of followers, but because they are very good at allying themselves with right-wing politicians and making deals with them. So that Trump, who I bet you would not suspect of being very conservative on sexual issues, becomes the president of choice for evangelicals in the United States. I don't think they have any illusions about his sex life. What they know is that he delivers what he promises to them.
And deliver he did. Three Supreme Court seats and a working majority for this new agenda. And the United States, similarly to Poland, has a voting majority that does not want to ban abortion. You mentioned earlier that the number is overwhelming in Poland against a ban. It's also pretty heavily against an outright ban here in the United States, but through the steady capture of key constituencies, through the steady political work that allows you to control various parts of the state apparatus, eventually you get your way. And it sounds like in that particular regard, the United States and Poland are very similar.
Very similar, that's true.
So what's the next step for Poland? You mentioned upcoming elections, but you can't put all your eggs in that basket, can you?
Of course not. The women's movement always has to keep in mind that politicians, at least in Poland, tend to put women's issues on the back burner, that there is always something more urgent. And that something is referred to as national interest or, you know, saving Poland from whatever evil. So the women's movement has a kind of autonomy and a skepticism. But I don't think it right now has the power to mobilize thousands of people that it had even 2 years ago. I think we are now in a state of dormancy where women are tired. There's a sense of hopelessness. There's a huge inflation. We have almost 20% inflation right now. So people are in economic dire straits. And of course, there is the war on Ukraine, which is really right next door to us. And I'm hoping that the movement will be able to get things moving again soon. But I'm not entirely convinced that this will happen.
Can international events create unpredictable and really unanticipated political spaces? You know, the polls were being looked askance from the rest of the EU at certain points in this recent right-wing era. Now they're star Europeans taking in Ukrainian refugees, helping out with weapons to the Ukrainian army, and really quite on side with the EU attempts to help Ukraine push Russia out. Between Orbán, Viktor Orbán, outflanking Poland on the right and attracting a lot of attention on Hungary and on himself, creating a little space for Poland to go on and keep on doing what it's doing, and then the unexpected fallout from a Ukraine invasion, is Poland's right-wing government getting some breathing space that it might not have otherwise anticipated?
It's hard to tell what it would be like without the war, but with the war, they are slowly losing popular support. Not as fast as I would like them to, but not as slow as some others might have guessed. The war in Ukraine, Putin's war in Ukraine, has a women aspect to it that I think is worth mentioning. You have to realize that almost all of the refugees coming into Poland were women, most of them with children. And perhaps it's not fair to say that the aid effort was dominated by women, but from what I could see, it was women welcoming women into their homes. And that's hospitality, that generosity. I think that created a new aura around feminism in Poland. All the organizations that had been battling for women's rights transformed themselves within hours into aid organizations. And that, to some extent, is still going on. And of course, part of it is helping Ukrainian women get abortions because they are stupefied to find out that it's banned. And we're talking war rape victims in some cases, who were immediately given flyers from Poland, anti-choicers, explaining to them that there's no abortion here. But then the next thing that happens is that they get in touch with Polish feminists and they use the Abortion Without Borders network. So it is a case of massive women's solidarity in a country with very oppressive laws.
Well, this is fascinating and obviously a story with many chapters still yet to be told. Agnieszka Graf, thank you very much for joining us on Shifting Ground.
Thank you.
You've been listening to On Shifting Ground, produced in partnership with KQED, with funding from TPG, the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and from listeners like you. If you'd like to support the program by becoming a member, or by making a donation of any size, please go to worldaffairs.org/donate. Today's episode was produced by Elise Manoukian and Andrew Stelzer. It was mixed and mastered by Matteo Schimpf. Additional production and engineering were provided by Rob Spate. KQED's Jim Bennett is our technical supervisor. Philip Yun is CEO of World Affairs. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Ray Suarez. Thanks for listening.